The time now is 3 o'clock, and you're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO for Wednesday, January 8th. I'm your host, Lisa Fu. Margie Hamburger from the City Museum will be here to highlight Saturday's Coffee and Collections presentation on the Kennedy Street Centennial Portrait Project. We'll talk to Brian Sullivan about his new CD. Kevin Hood will give us a preview of his Wildlife Wednesday program on the anniversary of the Wilderness Act. Jeremy Shea will give us a sneak peek of tonight's Forum at 360 with Alaska Robotics, and we'll get an update on the mountain lift at Eagle Crest. That, Writer's Almanac, music, and more, all on today's Juno Afternoon. First is National Native News. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Four people are spending this winter at a tribal harvest and research camp in the woods of northern Wisconsin. They're hoping to be the symbol of mining resistance there. Mike Simonson reports.
Tuesday morning was the coldest so far. The thermometer was at 30 below, and they're surrounded by 25 inches of snow. Nick Vanderpie and three others from the Lacouturay and Molek bands of Ojibwe are fighting the elements while fighting the proposed iron ore mine next to their small village.
Hey, it's paradise below zero up here. We got some wall tents going. We got wigwams. We got plenty of dry wood. We got water, deer meat, maple sugar, wild rice, and lots of donuts. We're doing really well.
Why all the donuts?
Need some fat. Need some fat to burn because it's so cold.
Vanderpie says they have two wigwams with large carps thrown over them and a sauna for bathing. They wear wool everything. He says he looks like the abominable snowman when he goes outside.
I've got these idiot strings on my mittens so that I don't lose my mittens when I'm out cutting firewood. One thing about this snappy weather, though, is that the wood really splits. Like right now, as soon as you touch an axe to it, you got firewood.
Iron County has twice proposed to evict them, saying they are campers and have no right to stay beyond 2 weeks. The harvest and research camp was set up last May. Vanderpie expects to be there next May.
We haven't been ejected yet by Iron County. I don't think they want to take this to federal court, so we're in pretty good shape.
Vanderpie says they are grateful to Iron County for keeping Moore Park Road plowed to their village. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson.
New data shows nationwide there's been a 20% decline in the number of cancer deaths over the last 20 years. However, as Tristan Autone reports, cancer rates among Native Americans in the Southwest have not gone down with the rest of the nation.
New statistics released by the American Cancer Society show that nationally there's been a 20% decrease in risk of death from all cancers. For breast and colon cancer, that rate of decline is closer to 35%. However, in the Southwest, there's a slightly different picture.
One thing that's unsettling is Native American death rates have basically remained static.
Otis Brawley is chief medical officer for the American Cancer Society.
The combination of high caloric intake, lack of physical activity, and obesity, those three factors actually are the second leading cause of cancer in the United States, second only to tobacco usage. And that is a special problem in the Native American population.
According to Brawley, the major Native American populations with cancer are currently located in New Mexico and Arizona. However, he adds that data is not available on other Native populations in other states. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
The Cherokee language is now available on Microsoft Office web applications like Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. According to the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma, the public can create an account online at skydrive.com to access the programs for computers and mobile devices. The tribe says the project is part of language preservation efforts. The tribe has a designated language translation department working with technology companies. Many computing terms have not existed in Cherokee before. So last year, 150,000 modern English terms were translated into their Cherokee equivalent. For example, anti-spyware was translated into "it will be stopped." Cherokee is also available on Microsoft Windows 8, Google Gmail, and Apple iPhone and iPad. On this day in 2013, a federal court ruled Métis and non-status Indians in Canada qualified as Indians under the Constitution Act and therefore are under Canadian government jurisdiction. The ruling came after more than a decade-long legal battle. They wanted access to benefits that status Indians receive, including health care and education. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PICCLICKGIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm your host, Lisa Fu, and right now we have Margie Hamburger in the studio. Welcome, Margie.
Thank you for having me.
So today you're here to talk about Saturday's Coffee and Collections presentation on the Kennedy Street Centennial Portrait Project.
Correct.
And you're with the City Museum.
Yeah.
What is Coffee and Collections?
It's a monthly program that we've been running in the fall, winter, and spring for the community. And we try and pick a topic each month on a Saturday morning that provides some interesting tie-in with history that the community would be interested to hear. And so this particular one, Claire Richardson received a grant this past year, the Juno History Grant, which is a program that we administer. And she was using her funds for some activities that have been happening in the Star Hill neighborhood, in particular this celebratory photograph. But she's going to come on Saturday and talk to people about what she did. She's going to actually officially present the photograph as a donation to the museum. So we will have that there in our permanent collection. But also she's hoping to inspire other people in the community to think about how to celebrate their neighborhoods, the places that they live, to get tips from her about what they've been doing up on Star Hill to kind of keep track of the living history of that neighborhood, as well as the old history, and build community up there. So she's also, it's kind of going to be a little bit presentation, a little bit workshoppy on Saturday at 10:30.
So she has this photograph.
Right.
And is it an old photograph?
Or? No. It was just taken, I think this past summer.
Okay.
And it's one of those long Ron Klein photographs, you know, those long ones where they invited people who were either current or former residents of Star Hill to come. They had sort of a block party, which was sort of the community building part, and part of the activities were to take this photograph. And then Claire subsequently has done the work of, you know, printing it archivally and so forth, and then also identifying all the people in the photograph with a little bit of information about each person and what their relationship to the neighborhood is, so that that can be, you know, captured for perpetuity.
And you said she was able to do this. She was the recipient of last year's Juno History Grant.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is that exactly?
That is something that community people can apply to, and they can find out more information by calling us or on our website. But roughly some people can apply to maybe around $1,000, $1,500, something like that, you know, depends on the project, to do something that preserves the history of Juno in some way. For example, we had some funds that were used in the signage that I think is now officially up by the Douglas Boat Harbor for the Mike Pusich. That's the official name, the Mike Pusich Boat Harbor over there. And so his daughter, who was involved in actually getting the signage put together and up about that, you know, we were part of the funders for that activity. Claire used some of the funds here to, you know, print the photograph and have it framed and use some of the time for the research and so forth. And we have a number of other recipients, which I won't go into the use of our time, but people can also go on the website and see what sort of projects people have done in the past and think about how they might want to apply for a grant for next year.
Okay, so you said this was part presentation, part workshop,
mm-hmm.
and it's focused on the neighborhood,
right.
How to preserve the past, celebrate it, and, you know, perhaps throw an event or organize some sort of event. Why is this so important?
Well, you know, we pride ourselves, I think, in Juno, as many places, about being a strong community, and we really are that. But people have to do some work to keep that alive and to get to know your neighbors and to remember the stories and keep it moving along. I mean, history isn't dead. History keeps going along each day. It's more history. So it's fun, it's community building, it's remembering, some of us are real good at that, and some of us need some help, or, you know, think, gosh, That'd be fun to do, but who could do it? And then you think, well, maybe I could do it. So Claire can help to inspire us in that way.
That's great. I know Star Hill has a lot of history.
Uh-huh.
I was invited to that block party and ended up going at the end, but I believe there are many houses on that block that are over 100 years old.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure in other pockets, other neighborhoods in Juneau, there's a wealth of history there.
Right. And, you know, we just had a presentation on copying collections last month, which was about the settling of the Mendenhall Valley. And there's a lot that's just not documented about all those neighborhoods out there. And so it would be great for people out in the valley to also realize, you know, we have history, too, not just the 100 or 200-year-old houses, but even the 25-year-old houses and so forth, because eventually, you know, those are going to be old, too, and we want to remember that. Yeah,
so it's all over the place. Claire will give us tips and advice on how to do this.
Correct, and some resources and things, yep.
And so that's Coffee and Collections, Saturday, 10:30 to noon at the Juneau Douglas City Museum, and it is a free event.
It is a free event, and Heritage Coffee is our sponsor, so they provide us with coffee, and so it's a nice place to get warm and meet your friends and neighbors or maybe people you don't even know and get to know them, and it's been a really great event. I've learned so much by going to these things.
Great. So that's this Saturday's Coffee and Collections. It's Claire Richardson as a presenter, and she's going to be presenting on Star Hill Centennial Neighborhood Portrait. And I know that, Margie, you want to talk about something else as well.
Right. Well, we have also, we've got a lot of community involvement this month and next month at the museum. We have a really cool exhibit, if you haven't had a chance to see it, called Ordinary Things, Extraordinary Tales, with 13 community members who were invited to help co-curate this exhibit and tell stories about objects in our collection. But we are inviting the public at large to come on the 17th of Friday. We're calling it Third Friday. And come, I think, does it say 5:30 on that sheet?
5:30 to 7 p.m.
5:30 to 7 p.m. And if people want to come and tell a story about a significant object in their life, we would really, really love to have that happen. People can come to our show that's up now and be inspired or call me if they want some more ideas about what I'm talking about. But everyone has objects in their life that hold stories by virtue of memory, usage, incidents that happen around it. And it's a great kind of kicking off place to kind of reflect on just who we are and what role objects play in our lives. So we invite the community, young and old, to come in and tell stories that evening.
That sounds like a really fun event. It's almost like show and tell,
exactly,
which we used to do when we were younger,
yeah,
but we don't really have that opportunity to do anymore.
Exactly. That's exactly how I've been thinking about it. And yes, if you come to the show, some of the objects seem very, very insignificant until you hear what the story is. There's like marbles and there's milk bottles and things like that. So
so that's next Friday, January 17th, 5:30 to 7 p.m. Bring in an object, share your story. All ages are welcome.
Correct.
And you're trying to restrict people's storytelling to 3 minutes or less.
Right. I'm not going to be hard and fast about it, but, you know, just to give people time, and we'll see who all wants to tell stories. But also that makes it a little less scary than something longer for people who maybe are less comfortable telling stories.
Thank you so much, Marjorie, for sharing all these great events at the City Museum.
Well, thanks for having me.
Up next, we have Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 8th of January, 2014. It was on this day, 1790, the first State of the Union address took place. George Washington in New York City, which was the capital at the time, a fairly short speech, about 3 single-spaced pages. He began with the good news that North Carolina was joining the Union, that countries around the world seemed to be showing more and more goodwill towards the young American government, that there were good omens that the nation would be prosperous. He talked about the dilemma of protecting the borders, about the need for immigration reform, how important it was for the country to support scientific development, and about setting up national higher education. And he said, "The welfare of our country is the great object to which our cares and efforts ought to be directed, and I shall derive great satisfaction from a cooperation with you, the Senate, and the House of Representatives in the pleasing though arduous task of ensuring to our fellow citizens the blessings which they have a right to expect from a free, efficient, and equal government." It was on this date in 1877 the Lakota Sioux warrior Crazy Horse fought his last battle against the United States Army half a year after the Battle of Little Bighorn in June 1876. Battle took place at Wolf Mountain in Montana against the army of General Miles. Crazy Horse retreated, and in May he led his remaining people to Fort Robinson and formally surrendered. It's the birthday of Elvis Presley. Tupelo, Mississippi, 1935, made his debut at the age of 10, singing Old Shep at a talent contest, came in fifth. The following year, he wanted a bicycle, but it was too expensive, and his mother Gladys bought him a guitar instead, which cost $12.95 at the Tupelo Hardware Company. Family moved to Memphis when the boy was 13. He grew up in public housing, listening to Memphis rhythm and blues. And when he was 18, working as a truck driver, he wanted to give his mother a gift and stopped by the Memphis Recording Service, where you could record your own songs for a little money. He paid $4 to record two songs, My Happiness and That's When Your Heartaches Begin, and caught the attention of the owner of the studio, Sam Phillips, who called Elvis back in to see what other songs he might know. Here's a poem for today by W.S. Merwin to the new year. With what stillness at last you appear in the valley, your first sunlight reaching down to touch the tips of a few high leaves that do not stir, as though they had not noticed and did not know you at all. Then the voice of a dove calls from far away in itself to the hush of the morning. So this is the sound of you, here and now, whether or not anyone hears it. This is where we have come with our age, our knowledge, such as it is, and our hopes, such as they are, invisible before us, untouched, and still possible. To the New Year by W.S. Merwin, from his collected poems, 1996 to 2011, published by Library of America, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity, lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at lumosity.com. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
That was Garrison Keillor's Writer's Almanac on Juno Afternoon, KTOO. I'm your host, Lisa Fu, and right now we have Brian Sullivan in the studio. Welcome, Brian.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you doing?
Oh, great.
So you are here to talk about your new CD.
Yeah. I've been working on these projects for a long time, and it became affordable and a bright idea to release one of them, you know, so.
So, because you've written many, many songs.
Yeah, I got about 10 or 15 albums that I wrote. I got the idea. I used to live with a Love family in San Francisco. Every morning we'd pool in our change, and everybody would write a poem or a song, and we'd run off copies at the print shop and hand them out on Haight Street and ask for a donation. And we'd spend $3 and we'd make like $50. And that's how we ate that day. So it was too expensive to do it the old way, but the digital media became more affordable and easier to do. Yeah.
Okay, so you are a singer, a songwriter, and you also play different instruments as well.
Yeah.
What do you play?
I play guitar and harmonica and French horn. Don't ask me to play saxophone.
And so you've written many, many songs. Where do you find your inspiration from?
People I've known and places I've been. I try to write something outside of myself.
Yeah.
So what are some general topics of your song, your songs?
Oh, the one I picked was for an old friend in Ohio. Yeah.
So you write songs for people sometimes?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like letters or a journal. It's more of a journal. Yeah.
And this album, so you've written, like you said, 100, 150 different songs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is your first album that you've put together. You've compiled
these
songs.
The first one we released, yeah.
And it's called Invisible Circus.
Mm-hmm.
And where does that name come from?
That's an old children's story, Buddhist children's story, something about the sorcerer traveled around and he had an invisible circus.
And you don't play by yourself. You're part of a band.
Well, I play with a band at the folk fest and stuff. It's really hard. You know, people have jobs and school and kids and stuff. So.
And what is the band called?
5 o'clock Charlie. Mm-hmm.
And what's that name from?
Oh, I stole that from MASH. That's where at exactly 5 o'clock, this crazy Korean guy flies over and drops propaganda on the Red Cross tent.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the name came from.
Yeah.
And who do you play with?
On this album with Scotty Fry from the Alaskan Hotel. And that's the only person on this album. And him and Betsy Sims, they did a wonderful job for us. So
are you happy with how the album came out?
Yeah, I was really surprised how it came out.
You're surprised? What were you surprised about?
Well, you know, we did it like at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, and we practiced every day for 2 weeks before we went in the studio, and we just knocked it out and didn't waste any time. We didn't get to listen to it for 3 weeks after we did it. And when I finally got to hear it, I was really happy. So
that's great. How long have you been performing in Juneau?
20 years.
And where has your performing been mostly?
What was that?
Where do you mostly perform?
At the Alaskan Hotel, the Folk Festival, or down at Marine Park at lunchtime in the summer.
And you've done a lot of open mic nights at the Alaskan Hotel. Is that correct?
Yeah, over 1,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Over 1,000.
Yeah.
In the last...
20 years.
In the last 20 years. Okay.
Yeah.
And you must obviously enjoy doing that.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of a... I had a kind of a love for vaudeville and stuff like that when I was a kid. And I lived in San Francisco for a while, and street buskers and performers and street arts, you know, that's part of the culture there. And I kind of learned and fell into that.
And so that's what you enjoy about performing at open mic?
Yeah.
It's kind of like the mix
of... Impromptu, you know. You know, it's for the moment, and everybody's having a good time. It's play for your friends. Stare at your grandma on Thanksgiving or something, but...
Do you ever get nervous?
Oh, yeah, I used to a long time ago.
But now that you've done 1,000
of them... Yeah, I can do it sober now.
You couldn't before?
No, not at the beginning.
You've performed elsewhere. You said you used to live in San Francisco, and would you perform there as well?
Yeah, I played the very first AIDS benefit at a commune called the Hog Farm that belonged to Wavy Gravy that put on Woodstock. And that was back in 1984.
Wow.
That was pretty interesting. And,
what made you come up to Juneau?
The ferry. I tell everybody that.
Did you come up here for a specific reason, or was it just to explore?
Well, I hitchhiked most of North America, except off 48. Well, I hitchhiked around Oahu, and I hitchhiked 48 states, and I hitchhiked Mexico. And Juneau was, Alaska was the last state I hadn't done that. So I caught the ferry up here, and I ended up staying.
Do you hitchhike around here?
No, I walk.
You walk, okay.
Yeah, same difference.
How many songs are on Invisible Circus?
11.
And how did you decide what 11 songs to put in it?
It's just ones I've been playing currently. There's like 4 older songs, 4 new blues songs, and 2 songs that I never played for anybody really, but yeah.
And now everybody's heard them.
Yeah, everybody can hear them now.
Are you still performing at the Alaskan?
Yeah, every Thursday night.
Every Thursday night.
We had a CD release party a couple weeks ago on a Saturday, and it was a success. I was really, it was like over 100 people there, and everybody was good and paid attention. We had three bands. And
so people can always listen to you Thursday nights at the Alaskan Hotel. And if they want to buy your CD, Invisible Circus, where can they do that?
They can buy it at Rainy Day Books, or they can get it from me.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
And they can find you at the Alaskan, or they can find you...
Yeah, we're eventually going to put it... I got some videos on YouTube, but we're eventually going to try to put it on iTunes or Amazon or Spotify or something. You know, where I got those couple steps I got to do before we put it on there, but... This is hot off the press.
Congratulations on this first album.
Yeah.
And I need to come down one Thursday night to see you play.
Yeah.
We're going to listen to track number two. What's this track?
It's going to make you cry tonight.
And can you tell me a little bit about it?
No, it's just a memory of some old friends.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Brian, for being on the show.
All right.
We're going to listen to track number two of Invisible Circus. Brian Sullivan's first album.
Gonna make you cry tonight. Guess I have to say it's all right. Once I stood this open door, gave you the key, don't know what for. Am I gonna make you cry tonight? Guess I have to say it's all right. Are you gonna miss me tonight? Long, no end in sight. Coast to coast, sea to burning sea. Sometimes I wish you still remembered me. Are you gonna miss me tonight?
A dance party for the 6 and under crowd. Gold Creek Child Development Center presents the 3rd annual Tot Rave, January 11th from 4:30 to 7:30 at DiePack, featuring music from DJ White Chocolate, the Tappy Dancers, a silent auction, and more. Tickets at the door, $5, ages 3 and up, and children under 2 are free. All children must be accompanied by an adult. There'll be food available for purchase, and all proceeds benefit the center. So mark your calendars for the Tot Rave, January 11th at DiePack, 586-6085.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Lisa Fu. And right now we have Kevin Hood and Patricia Wary in the studio with us. Hi, Kevin and Patricia.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. So first off, can you each introduce yourselves?
I'm Patricia Wary, and I'm a board member for Alaska Wildlife Alliance Southeast Branch. And we are sponsoring Wildlife Wednesdays on Wednesdays each month through the wintertime. And then Kevin is our speaker tonight.
And my name is Kevin Hood, and I work for the Forest Service as a wilderness manager for the Admiralty Island National Monument and Juneau Ranger District on the Tongass, here in, based out of Juneau.
Okay, so Wilderness Manager for Admiralty Island National Monument. What does that mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. I get that one a lot. I oversee the programs we have in place to keep our wilderness wild, essentially. And wilderness management itself is a bit of an oxymoron, because you're mostly trying to manage the human interaction with wilderness such that people are not impacting the lands and leaving them in an impaired, you know, status for the future. And so what I do is I supervise three different crews. There's the crew at Pack Creek. It's a very popular brown bear viewing area. There's also the Admiralty Island Cabins and Trails crew that try to keep up the trails and cabins there. And also the Juneau Ranger District Wilderness Kayak crew that works down in Tracy Arm and Endicott Arm and interacts a lot with the tour boats down that way. And so what we try to do also is answer people's questions and, you know, to the degree we can as well help out researchers learning more about these areas. But our overall mandate is to try to keep them wild in perpetuity.
Okay, and Kevin, you're tonight's speaker for Wildlife Wednesday. So what is the Wildlife Wednesday program?
It's a program that Alaska Wildlife Alliance Southeast does in the wintertime. It's going to be this evening, 7 to 8. We are at the Thunder Mountain High School in their library. And we have presenters on wildlife kinds of issues. And we do refreshments and kind of a just chit-chat and learn a lot from each other at the same time.
How long has Wildlife Wednesdays been going on?
A few years, 3 or so.
And what is the goal of it?
Inform, educate, excite people.
And do you usually bring in a good audience?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We've had 100.
Oh, wow.
We end up with more like 50.
Great. Okay. And tonight's program poses a question. What is that question, Kevin?
Yeah, the title of my talk is Can Untrammeled Wilderness Endure? And it's a question that basically gets at one of the key words in the Wilderness Act. The Wilderness Act was passed in 1964, 50 years ago. Maybe we'll talk about that in a second. But and in the Act, it actually not only gives Congress the authorization to designate wilderness areas, but it has a legal definition of wilderness, and that defines wilderness in part as an area where the earth and its community of life are untrammeled by man. And it's a very unique word and one that's frequently misunderstood. And what
often when I hear the word wilderness in relation to national forest, is it the big W or is it the little W that we're talking about? And here you're talking about the official wilderness.
Yeah, it's designated wilderness. Sometimes people refer to it as a capital W, wilderness, just to be clear. So this would be, it represents the most, or the public lands with the highest level of protection in our country. And so designated wilderness can occur within a national park, a national forest, a national wildlife refuge, or on Bureau of Land Management lands as well. It's about 5% of the United States, actually, is designated wilderness. And Alaska here, we have the good fortune, I'd say, to have more than half of the wilderness we have preserved in our country, which is the basis for both our healthy salmon industry as well as the tourism industries and some of the other industries like outfitter, guiding, hunting, things like that.
And what does untrammeled mean? How would you define that?
It's an old word that was purposefully selected in the Wilderness Act. And what it means is essentially unimpeded, unmanipulated, uncontrolled, unfettered, free. And so what it's basically saying is that if the earth and its community of life are untrammeled by man, we're trying to take our hands off and let nature kind of behave as if she would, were people not interfering with her affairs, so to speak. So we're trying to actually restrain ourselves and see what happens.
So that question again, can untrammeled wilderness endure? So endure?
The Wilderness Act says that that the purpose of designating wilderness is to have an enduring resource of wilderness for present and future generations in perpetuity. And the reason I pose the question is that there are a lot of pressures now, especially with things like climate change, some of the other, you know, troubles that we're experiencing with like mass extinctions, fragmented habitat, all kinds of pollution, things like that. Some people are starting to say, well, there's times when maybe we shouldn't be standing back with our hands off the wheel, so to speak, but we actually need to go in there and start doing things, maybe moving this species over here so it'll survive, for example. You know, like polar bears might be a good example. If the sea ice disappears, you know, are they going to, should we sit back and watch if they're in the going into the Arctic Wildlife Refuge, which has a large wilderness area? Or do we want to take them from there and move them over somewhere where there still is sea ice, perhaps over in Canada somewhere? So these kinds of, I think the dire environmental times are leading a lot of people to sort of question whether we should, if there's a wisdom in still staying hands off in our management.
So is that what you'll be talking about tonight?
And that's exactly what I'll be talking about. I'll be looking at the pressures on people to engage with wilderness and start trammeling it, so to speak. And I'll discuss some of the cases that we're looking at that are occurring around the country and the repercussions for what this would mean if we are to start going in and trying to fix things.
So this is the first Wildlife Wednesday of the year, is that correct?
Well, our season runs through the fall, so it's a winter fall, and this is about the third one we've had, third, fourth one. We'll have two more.
Okay, so it's the first one of 2014.
Okay, you would like to look at it that way.
And this 2014 is a special year for wilderness.
Yes.
So can one of you talk about that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. This is the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, and so across the country there's going to be a variety of celebrations and events to commemorate this anniversary. And so we've got a few things going on here in Juneau. This talk tonight is kind of kicking things off for the year. And we have a lot of things sort of in the hopper that are still percolating, so to speak, that we'll definitely let you know as they settle. But we do have a few things that we know are going to be coming up. There's going to be for example, on Saturday, March 1st, at the Friends of Admiralty Island annual meeting, which will be at the Juneau Yacht Club. It's going to have a strong wilderness focus there, and there's a business meeting that starts at 2, but starting around 4 to 5, there'll be Hank Lentfer. He's a local author. He's written some great works. It's always a treat to hear him speak. He'll give a presentation. There'll be a potluck at 6 to 7, and then at 7 o'clock, there's a film that was made over the last year or so. That will be presented by Adam Andis of the Sitka Conservation Society, and it's featuring several of the wilderness areas from the Tongass. So that's all on March 1st, Saturday, at the Juneau Yacht Club. A couple other small things we got going on, or hopefully not small, but other things we have going on would be on Friday, March 28th, there's going to be a professional actor. He's dedicated his career to portraying John Muir. And this is going to be a real treat, I think. He'll be at the Juneau Public Libraries. Beth Weigel's been working with him and done a great job in getting things arranged. And that'll be at 7 p.m. downtown here. And there may be a few other presentations, we hope, in some of this local schools as well. John Muir is sort of the forefather, of course, of preservation in our country. And so he'll be sort of talking about the germination of the wilderness idea. And then another event that'll be going on is we have artist residencies where we take artists who are interested in wilderness and who do all kinds of different work. You know, it could be writing, playwriting, poetry, essay writing, it could be photography, painting, sketching. And we're going to have a traveling exhibit of a bunch of wilderness artist residency, sort of an exhibit from 18 wilderness areas around Alaska, and the exhibit's going to be going throughout the state, and it will start in Sitka. It'll be there in March at the National Historic Park, It'll be in Ketchikan down in April, mid-April to mid-May, and it'll be here in Juneau for the month of June at the Canvas.
Great. So that's Kevin Hood highlighting the events going on to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act. And Kevin Hood is tonight's speaker for Wilderness Wednesday.
Wildlife Wednesday.
Oh, sorry.
Pardon me.
Wildlife Wednesday. I apologize. Wildlife Wednesday, Can Untrammeled Wilderness Endure? And it's tonight at Thunder Mountain High School Library, second floor at 7 p.m. Thank you, Patricia and Kevin, for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Traveling singer-songwriter Marion Call. Join me for the next concert in the KRNN Spotlight Series on January 8th at 7 p.m. in the Goldtown Nickelodeon. I'll be singing my original acoustic songs about life on the road and home in Alaska. Most songs will be from my brand new album, Sketchbook. I'll be joined by local musician Laura Zahasky and host and interviewer Pat Race. Again, that's January 8th at the Goldtown. Tickets and information at krnn.org and at the station.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. I'm your host, Lisa Fu, and right now we have Jeremy Shea in the studio. Welcome, Jeremy.
How's it going?
Jeremy's going to give us a sneak peek of tonight's forum at 360 with Alaska Robotics. And Jeremy, ordinarily here, you are news and public affairs producer and reporter for KTOO, but tonight you're going to be a host.
That's right. Yeah, I'm hosting tonight's forum at 360. This is our new show that we rolled out, I guess it was back in October, but unofficially, but really officially with the one you hosted, Lisa, at the end of December. And tonight we've got, we're talking about political satire, because Pat Race, before he runs over and hosts that Marion Call thing, is going to be on TV with us and here in the studio. And they just had a Kickstarter a few months back that they successfully kickstarted their project to put out 6 video episodes of satirical political news covering state politics.
Okay, so it's Pat Race, and then there's some other...
Yeah, so Alaska Robotics is the label that Pat Race, Aaron Suring, and Lou Logan use. So we'll have all 3 of them here starting at 5 o'clock is our target time to start taping, and we're live streaming too. So if you can't make it down here, you should be able to watch it at 360north.org as well.
So why did you want to have them on the show?
Well, it's an interesting topic. You know, I'm a big fan of Daily Show, big fan of Colbert Report, and more so The Onion lately too. It's just a really fun way to, like, you know, you don't realize it, but you're actually learning something along the way, and you get a good laugh out of it at the same time. So it's just a really satisfying and actually kind of meaty in its own way, informative way to entertain yourself. And I'm always trying to make Gavel Alaska, one of the other hats I wear here, is I run Gavel Alaska during the legislative season. And it's always kind of a struggle to make it more accessible and easy to follow what's going on in the Capitol building. So I'm always trying to find ways to make it more accessible, and one way is to poke fun at it and laugh at it and learn things along the way.
And they're starting their series soon because the session is starting soon.
Yeah. I think Pat tweeted recently that they just had their first kind of formal writers meeting. I don't know any details about it yet, but maybe we'll find out in a couple of hours.
So, right, it's happening tonight,
right,
at 5 p.m.
Right.
Doors open at 4:45.
Right.
And you want people to join the audience.
That's right, yeah. So we've got the studio set up right now. These are live tapings, so you get to be part of our TV studio audience. There will be 10 or 15 minutes towards the end. It's an hour-long taping, And there will be 10 or 15 minutes left at the end for people to ask questions directly. So if you have some questions in mind, you're welcome to sit in on that and ask at the appointed time. And we're also soliciting questions on the web, too. If you can't make it, you can tweet your question and mention at 360 North. And we're also trying to plug the hashtag Forum360 for tweets along those lines. And we can get those to me, and I can ask them your question.
And it's also being live streamed.
Right, yeah. So we've got a live stream page up at the 360 North page. Along the top, if you visit there, there's a forum at 360. Oh, there's also an alert bar, so there's kind of a splashy thing up there that says, click this to watch this live. So, yeah, it should be easy to find once you get to 360north.org.
Can people watch it live and tweet questions during the show?
They sure can, Lisa. Yeah. We've got a little, I don't know what the right word is, a widget or a little window pane there on the side that you can just type your questions right in there. And Sarah Yu will be keeping an eye on that and feeding me questions, you know, assuming they're appropriate and haven't been asked already. So, yeah.
So that's an option, the live stream option, for folks who can't make it down to the KTOO studio. Because it is happening tonight, and it's a free event. We want people to be in the audience. And, again, if they can't be here tonight, if they can't live stream it, there's other opportunities where they can be watching Forum at 360.
Right, yeah. You know, it'll be up on TV, you know, if you got your rabbit ears or your cable. You can watch it, I think it's next Friday at 8 p.m., not this week, but next week's Friday, on 360 North, which is public television statewide. And you can also listen to it. We're putting out a radio version of it that Thursday. So I believe it's Thursday the 16th at 7 p.m., I think, on KTOO. Yeah, I'm going to have to double-check that. We've got it written down right on the website. If I've got it wrong.
And it should be a really great evening. These guys are really funny.
Yeah, these guys are really funny. That's part of what I left out. These guys are really funny. They're really smart. And, you know, you can check out their YouTube channel. It's just, just Google Alaska Robotics or search for Alaska Robotics on YouTube, and you'll find their channel. And they've got some of the old stuff they've done, which a lot of it holds up pretty well. Some of it's good. Yeah, it'll be fun. Local guys.
Right, they're local guys, and they're newsmakers.
Yeah, they've kind of saturated public radio, public television in the last week somehow. You know, Casey Kelly did a story about Pat Race encountering a bear, I think, in his driveway or something pretty recently, and that was kind of interesting. Meanwhile, Pat also had put out his calendar with bears on it. And yeah.
Very true, yeah. And then Marion's show is tonight. Pat
right.
Race is going to be hosting that.
Right, so you should be on time, because Pat's got to run over there and host that thing at 7, so no stragglers tonight.
So that's 5 p.m. at KTO's new studio, Forum at 360, Jeremy Shays hosting with funny guys from Alaska Robotics. Doors open at 4:45, with taping to start at 5.
Right.
Okay, thank you so much, Jeremy, for coming in.
Thanks, Lisa.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD.
and it's easy to share a little of your PFD in Southeast communities through Pick, Click, Give. There are over 36 causes based in the Juneau-Douglas area alone, including KTOO Public Radio. The application period for the 2014 PFD starts on January 1st. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon on KTOO News. I'm your host, Lisa Fu, and right now we have Julia Black and Matt Lillard in the studio. Hi, Julia and Matt.
Hello.
Hello.
So both of you guys are with Eagle Crest, or Matt, you're the general manager at Eagle Crest.
That's correct.
And Julia, you run Mountain Lift at Eagle Crest.
I do. I own and run it both.
And so the ski season is off to a full swing, right?
Yeah, we just came out of our holiday period, which we were open every day except Christmas Day from December 19th on. And it was a good holiday period. It wasn't the greatest. We certainly have snow and we're skiing. We're hoping more snow starts falling here and it gets a little bit colder. But it's been a good year so far, relatively.
Okay, and there's been some updates or some new occurrences with Mountain Lift. So first, can you tell us what Mountain Lift is?
So Mountain Lift is the small coffee shop that has moved from the bottom of the stairs in the freezing cold weather up into a nice little warm nook, basically. We call it a coffee nook. And we are expanding. We expanded up the mountain. So we call it Mountain Lift on the Mountain.
Oh, great.
And it's now in the Nest. And for folks who don't know what the Nest is, it's a warming hut at the very top of Ptarmigan. And people can't imagine it who haven't been up there. They're like, you have a coffee stand up there? Are you cold? Is it cold? And it's like, nope, it's a lovely little space. And Matt and the crew up at the mountain have been toting up equipment for me since the beginning of November. And we set up a little tiny corner over there. And so it's kind of exciting that we're expanding. And we now offer a little bit of food up there, along with real basics. Folks are like, is there an espresso machine? It's like, no, not yet. We're not that big yet. We're working on it, though, guys. We're working on it. Last year, I put out a board that was, I said, okay, Juno, what do you want to see up there? What would be your ultimate dream at the top? Of course, the hot tub came up. Fireplace came up. And, the ever-going saga of, well, can't we have a bar? No, that's not going to happen this year either. But soup and sandwiches was the next big one. So we have come up with a grilled cheese sandwich. We're going to be a grilled cheese sandwich place and soup. Handcrafted soup by Aaron Day out of our kitchen. He's our new kitchen manager. Great young man. Just got out of chef school and is handcrafting all of his soups. It's wonderful. We're very glad to be back to that style of soup. And we're going to be offering grilled cheese sandwiches four different kinds every weekend. We have the basic grilled cheese for adults on Dave's Killer Bread. We have the White Wonder bread with American cheese for the kids. We have a gluten-free option as well. And then we'll have a special. We'll have a grilled cheese sandwich special every week. And this week is the cheddar and apple pie.
Whoa.
Yeah, you caramelize apples and you stick them in amongst the cheddar and then you grill up the sandwich.
That sounds so good.
The soup, yeah, we're hoping it'll be something different and new. The soups will always be a surprise.
Okay.
Aaron kind of knows what they are sort of ahead of time, but I always neglect to ask. But if people want to know what's at the top, what's being served at the top, right next to my shop, posted on the wall, there's a whiteboard that has, we'll always have the specials, and we'll always have whether we're open or not, because I'm only open on weekends and school holidays. So I won't be open all week long. And we're doing very, very basic. I mean, drip coffee at this point, no hot chocolate, but a really nummy cider. I'm going all the way from the really healthy to from carrots and hummus all the way down to the candy bar, the quick grab and go.
And this is all at that location at the top.
Mm-hmm.
At the top.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems way more than basic. It seems like there's going to be a bunch of options.
I'm hoping. A lot of the baked goods that I do at the lower shop will come up.
Mm-hmm. And so you're expanding, so you're not abandoning the lower one.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've had to hire more staff or?
Yes. Yes, I've hired my for a lot of folks know that my son worked with me from the time he was 14 years old until he was 20. And last year he said to you, Mom, I love you, but I'm out of here. Good idea, honey. So, yep, I've hired new staff and come meet them. Jen Anderson is my manager down below. She is the operator and owner of the zip line.
Okay.
Out of Eagle Crest. So she's here now year-round, and that's very exciting. She's very good at what she's doing.
How long has Mountain Lift been around?
We're in our fifth season and sixth season. We spent 2 years at the bottom of the stairs, and if people don't know where that is, it's right down the first aid room, and it was the coldest spot in the entire building.
I've heard.
Yep. I have pictures of my cleaning rags dripping icicles off of the espresso machine.
Wow.
Yeah. But, it's nice to be upstairs. It's nice to have our little 9x6 space up there, up on top of the mountain. It's just about basically the same size, but we're not enclosed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so people will buy their stuff and then just eat it or drink it. Outside?
Or no, in the building. There's enough room.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's enough room in the building. The building's a good size. Do you know what the...
I don't know the square footage of the building, but, Mountain Lift on the mountain takes up a relatively small percentage of it. And then there's also an outside deck, which isn't utilized much now, but come February, March, April, it's a very popular place to be.
Okay,
and especially on those bright, sunny days, I'd imagine it'll be a very, very busy, bustling atmosphere up there, which will be great.
I'm sure having Mountain Lift enhances the experience of going to Eagle Crest.
Certainly. I mean, Eagle Crest has always had a food and beverage option. It's mainly more cafeteria food. It's certainly, your chicken fingers and fries, your hamburgers, hot dogs, specials, and good soups as well. But the addition of Mountain Lift has really brought that, the extra flavor to the mountain, I should say, and, definitely some great espressos and, scones and cookies and everything that comes with it. It's a great addition, a great partnership that really works. I think hopefully for both of us.
Yes, definitely for both of us.
And now food just won't be at the bottom. There's going to be another location as well.
Right.
And what are the hours?
The hours are going to be from 10 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon. And so just a real short window. But people don't generally want to pop in at 9:30 in the morning when they've just ridden up the lift. And so 10 o'clock seems to be the magic hour and down by 2.
Great. Yeah. And so this has already opened, this new location?
We're on our third day of operations, I think we've had.
Yes,
so she just got opened up at the top of the mountain anyway, towards the end of break, around the first of the year. And we'll continue weekends and holidays.
We will.
And have people already been happy and shown interest in it?
So far, yes. Like, they walk in, it smells better in there.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Julia, for telling us about that. Matt, is there anything else you want to add about Eagle Crest news?
No, just we've still got some great snow up on the mountain, and we're hoping the temperatures turn for us and it gets even better. So always check us out at skijuno.com or our Facebook page for more information.
Okay, thank you so much, Matt and Julia, for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for today's Juno Afternoon. For tomorrow, we'll get a preview of the new production at Perseverance Theater, Rush at Everlasting. Aaron Hansen will be here to highlight the North Country Cajun Club. We'll get an update on the Girls on the Run program with organizer Julie Walker. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. That, Writer's Almanac, music, and more, all on tomorrow's Juno Afternoon. This is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871, We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Thanks for listening to A Juno Afternoon. Now is All Things Considered.
It executed three men in the town square in front of hundreds of people, and that really announced its presence and set the tone for how ISIS would govern.
Rebel groups fighting against other rebel groups in Syria.